Hey everyone, before we get started with today's episode, I wanted to send you over to Pain Outside the Box. Pain Outside the Box is the sponsor for this week's episode. And Pain Outside the Box is a coaching and educational venture on TMS and neuroplastic pain. Miriam Gauci Bongiovanni, who is the founder, is a coach and mind-body practitioner who offers personalized one-on-one coaching as well as self-paced virtual programs designed to get people out of chronic pain. Her latest program, which is called Pain-Free Breakthrough, is a transformational training consisting of videos, readings, meditations, and other tools aimed at chronic pain recovery. The program will get you to implement TMS knowledge into practice, and it includes an editable workbook where you'll be able to journal, track your progress, and do the inner work. Check out our website now at www.painoutsidethebox.com. Right, the last episode of 2021. Let's do the Patreon shout out first, and then we'll get into what today's episode is about. So go to patreon.com/themindandfitnesspodcast if you're interested in monetarily supporting the show. Let me give a shout out to Dominic, Sasha, Sylvie, James, John, Brooke, Jason, Colette, Mindy, Irina, Kelly, Tony, Francisco, Michael, Tara, Anthony, Jen, and Nate, Christina, Ross, Julie, Brian, Arnie, and Barb. Thank you all so much for continuing to support the podcast month after month, week after week. I am forever indebted to you. So today's episode, I thought, what could I do for the end of 2021, sort of as the finale? And I thought, man, so this podcast has been listened to hundreds of thousands of times since its inception. And it began back in about, it was October of 2017. And then there was about a 4-month hiatus between January and May of that following year. And then it's aired pretty much every week since then. And I went back and I was looking at, gosh, what are the three most listened to episodes ever? And number one is Dr. Howard Schubiner. That aired in the summer of 2019. And then it's Steve Ozanich, which was recorded in December of 2017 and then aired in January of 2018. And then finally, Michelle Hinsberger slash Gru, which the first episode we did together, which is the one that I have for you today, which aired on in January of 2019. So it's I basically went through, I listened to all three episodes and picked out somewhere between, depends on the episode, between 6 and 14 minutes of what I feel is the best content of the interview, or some of the really big take-homes that I got, or takeaways that I got. And so that's what it's going to be. It's going to be a clip show. I've got two from Schubiner, I've got two from Ozanich, and I've got two from Hinsberger that we're going to listen to together and revisit. So if you're interested in learning more about each any of these episodes, it can all be found in the archives. The episode with Dr. Schubiner originally is episode 85. So if you go back, you can scroll on iTunes or Google Podcasts or Audio Boom or whatever sort of a podcast app it is that you're listening to this now, and go all the way back to episode 85. So in this very first clip, and this runs about 3 minutes or so, it's Howard Schubiner and I, Dr. Schubiner and I, talking about health grades and the latest trends and some of the components of neuroscience at that time. So let's take a listen.
Man, Adam.
I remember when I met with Dr. Hanscom and he was telling me a story about I mean, one thing that I do sometimes is I'll, and I used to do this a lot too, is I'll go to like healthgrades.com and I read the reviews of certain doctors. And Dr. Hanscom had a lot of negative reviews. And the main thing that I took away from what people were saying is that I went to see him wanting a spine surgery. And he told me about this book and told me that he wouldn't operate for at least 12 weeks until I went through this sham program of his. So like, he had told a story about a woman who would come into his clinic and just get so upset with him and, you know, elevated voice and all that kind of stuff. And then she had took off for, I think he had said she was away for 6 months. He hadn't heard from her, didn't know what had happened, but she had been in a wheelchair for a long time. I mean, years and years and years, and then came back into his clinic in 6 months, no pain, could walk. Like, it was as if nothing happened. And he asked her what happened. And she said, forgiveness. And I said, forgiveness for what? When he's telling me the story. And she just said, you know, I forgave everybody and I forgave everything, basically. And that was kind of the end of it and the beginning of the rest of her life. And I feel like stories like that are so, so prevalent. Early on when you started practicing in this stuff, I guess, how was your messaging to patients that come into the clinic evolved over the last, I mean, if you saw Sarno in 03, let's say 16 years, how has it changed your explanation from patients over the last 16 years?
I think what's happened is that I've become aware and excited about the neuroscience and the neuroscience concept, in particular, predictive coding. And predictive coding is that our brains create and generate what we experience, what we see, what we hear, what we feel, what we taste. And so our brain has the power and has to make the decisions and the judgments about whether to turn on pain or not in any particular moment, whether to turn on particular visual images or whatever, everything, how our body functions. And that's really changed how I view things, because Dr. Sarno tended to view it as, you know, primarily emotional and rage in particular, he liked to say. And so explaining things in a neuroscience way, I think, has been a shift. It's not to say that emotions aren't important, but I think people understand it better and can hang and can gravitate toward it easier if they understand how the brain works.
All right. So now we're going to fast forward about 9 minutes this is an example that I have given over the last couple of years on the podcast. Dr. Schubiner goes in to talk about detective work when it comes to symptoms. So I'm trying to get exactly to where the clip is, and this is proving to be a challenge here. Let me go back a little bit. So this is from 2634 to 3228 on that particular podcast. So let's, gosh, bear with me here for just a second. Almost there. Okay, so let's give this a listen. This clip here is about 6 minutes in this circle over and over and over again. And so it's easy to armchair when we're not that kid and to say, I mean, is the advice like you have to be indifferent to it? You have to not care about it. You have to not pay attention to it. Because there seems like there's a variety of different theories on this depending on whose book it is that you read. And so that particular person in that case, is it, hey, you have to try your best to not think about it? Or I guess what's the suggestion for you in your, I guess, maybe most simplified way for somebody that's where it's a case like that? They're continuously worried about it, and that's probably what's perpetuating.
Right, which is most of the cases.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, the way I look at treatment of this is, number one is making a clear diagnosis and understanding what the problem is. So as a physician, and I've written about this, and I'm actually helping me develop an app for this, is how to rule out a structural problem and how to rule in what I would call a neural circuit problem or a mind-body problem. And ruling out the structural problem is done by routine testing. Ruling in the neural circuit or the mind-body problem is done by evaluating the characteristics of the symptoms. So if the pain goes away on vacation, your detective work is over. If the pain, you know, starts in the morning and is gone by the afternoon or vice versa, your detective work is over. Now, if the pain shifts from one place in the body to another, all those things are evidence for neural circuits. So we're using, and there's a whole variety of ways of doing that. So we're just trying to establish a clear diagnosis first and foremost. Once you do that, the second step is to educate people, as you've been doing in your podcast and the way we've been talking about it, educate people to the role of the brain and why they're and how it's their brain creating this pain or other symptom rather than their body. The third step is to decrease fear. decrease this focus on it, fear of it, worry about it, fighting it, frustrated by it. And it basically does come down to, in the simplest form, to not care. It's like treating a temper tantrum. You have to turn your back and resolutely be indifferent to the child who's having a temper tantrum. You just can't care. That is extremely powerful in turning down the danger signal, which either immediately or over a course of a few weeks or a few months or even longer will eventually turn down the pain or the other symptom. After that, it's a question of then the question is there emotional stuff that you need to deal with? And then after that, is there life stuff you have to deal with? Is there changes in one's life that they need to make in relationship to a job or a spouse or a child or a family member? So those are the steps that I go through. But you're right, the first step after you make the diagnosis and do the education is a clear sense of indifference.
So that you talked about like the detective work is over portion of it earlier. I see a lot of people that say things like, this is probably the same as what you were talking about earlier in terms of the moving pain or the waking up, basically waking up in pain and then being fine by the afternoon. Detective work is probably over in that case. Is it goes the same with somebody who wakes up and their traps hurt, and then a couple hours later it's their mid back, and then a couple hours later it's the right side, and then a couple hours later it's the left side. All that movement stuff. Because one thing like I've had people that I know in my personal life who have this left to right thing, could be with a knee or could be with a back or could be anything. But let's say that it's in the back. The explanation that's given to them by a chiropractor, a physical therapist, or a friend or a trainer or somebody like that, they may say, oh, well, there's a disc issue, and it's when you move one way, maybe it's pressing on the nerve on the left and then it's pushing on the nerve on the right. Like, is that even a real thing, or is that, you know, that's more the detective work is over kind of stuff?
Well, people will go to great lengths to make a physical explanation. And there's, you know, so many ways of rationalizing it and coming up with ideas that just don't make sense. But if the pain is turning off in one area and turning on in another area, to me, that's what neural circuits do. That's exactly what they do. And you can see that when people haven't moved. So a lot of the testing we do in the office is having people imagine, say, if you have pain with bending over, and I ask you to close your eyes and imagine bending over and you get the pain, guess what? That's your brain, because you haven't actually bent over. And in another way, if you're sitting still, I had this happen yesterday with a woman she's had back pain for, I forget how many years, like about 5 years, never gone. And she was sitting and we were doing after all the diagnosis, after all the explanation, I was guiding her through a meditation to decrease fear of the symptoms, and the pain went away. So she hadn't moved. It wasn't like she had shifted or anything. It just went away. That's a neural circuit. That's diagnostic. So now she can be certain going forward, because the pain's going to come back. It's not never going to be there again. But now she knows, because she can see, oh, when I stopped caring about it, it went away for that moment. That's diagnostic.
So I love the detective work part of that. And it's something that I've used. And if you've been listening to this podcast for any length of time, I have used that example and that story tons of times. And I've also shared it with people in my personal life. So it's just something that I love. So the next couple of clips come from the Steve Ozanich episode. This is episode 14. And like I said, if you go in the archives, you can find it back in January of 2018 was the air date. So just bear with me for a second. I'm going to find the clip, but it's from 7:45 to 13:58. And in this, Ozanich talks about what was the worst diagnosis that he had, and then how he wanted to make sure that he was saying that TMS is not about a anti-doctor movement, and why that is important. So let me find it. This is about a 7-minute clip. Hang on. Let's see here. That's the old theme song. If you've been listening for a certain amount of time, you'll know that old catchy theme song. All right. Okay. Let's go back. Okay, so it's going to play for about 9 seconds, but it begins about 9 seconds in. So here we go. You've kind of hit rock bottom. What was the worst diagnosis that you got, where it was like, and this can be before you found the book or before you read the article, but, you know, here is what you're sentenced to for the rest of your life. What was the worst thing that you were told that you had?
Wow, there's so many. Yeah. I don't have enough time. I mean, from vision things and from internal organ things and skin things and back things, it's all the same, of course. You know, well, I guess the one that devastated me was when I was that young kid and they told me I would never play again. You know, I was a football player.
Yeah.
And that one just destroyed me. And of course, the ones that I'm hearing are much worse. You know, right now, the Lyme disease thing is the one that's really driving us crazy. You know, these doctors they keep blaming the people's chronic pain on Lyme disease. And it's not true. You know, it's not true. There's no such thing as chronic Lyme disease. You get it. Some people get it and they take the antibiotics and it goes away.
Yeah.
But the brain will take advantage of that opportunity to latch on to TMS at that point.
Yeah.
And it won't let go. It'll make the person think they still have chronic Lyme, but it was gone a long time ago.
Yeah.
And a bone on bone, this is the one that really makes me cringe even when I hear it. My doctor told me I have bone on bone, and that just the sound of that begins to manifest the problem. And it's not true. You know, those things don't cause pain either. And so every day I work with people who are crippled by their physicians with these outlandish diagnoses. And of course, the most common one is herniated disc. That's the most common one. You know, but I see other ones, labral tears and rotator cuff tearing and ankylosis and you name it. They're out there blaming the physical body when we know from Dr. Sarno's work that it is not the physical body at all. It never has been. The only thing we got confused in was technomedicine. In other words, the placebo effect.
Yep.
This is the most confusing factor that makes people believe they actually have a physical body problem when they do something, you know, whether it's surgery or a pill or stretching or stabbing or cutting or poking or whatever it is, and they get better. And they think, well, I did have a physical problem because it helped me. Well, it did not help you.
Yeah.
It was a placebo. It was your belief in it. My favorite one that I've been doing some lectures recently, and my favorite one was that one last year about the fake pill. I don't know if you saw it or not. Mm-mm. It was a fake pain pill. The researchers told these people in pain, see this pill here? It's no good at all. There's nothing in it. It won't do a damn bit of good for you. And they gave it to them, and 30% of them got better.
Yeah.
And it's because of what I talked about in the Great Pain Deception. You know, it's the interaction, the connecting, the relationship between the scientists and the doctors and the patient that makes all the difference in the world. And of course, today's medicine has gone out of control. The doctors don't even look at the patient anymore. They come into the room, they go to the scribble out a prescription and walk out.
Yeah, I remember I had an MRI for my shoulder about a year and a half ago, and I saw four different – I took the same imaging to four different doctors, and I now thinking back to it, I think maybe one of the four did look me in the eyes. You know what I mean? Like,
he looked you in the eye and said, do you have insurance?
Yeah, gosh, no kidding. And how good is it? So what year did you first read that, the article? Approximately what year was it?
Yeah, it was in a thing called Boardroom Classics.
Okay.
That guy was a big publisher at the time, Marty. He owned this big publishing company in New York, and Dr. Sarno saved his life.
Yep.
So Dr. Sarno did an article in it, and that would have been, 1997 or 98, something like that. I'm not sure anymore.
So it's been 20 years since you first read that. And I asked Nicole Sachs a couple of weeks ago, you know, do you like, what's the changing of the guard? You know what I mean? Like 10 years from now, what is the perception? And I feel like before I started looking into this stuff, it didn't exist. Like I never saw news articles. I never saw anything that had to do with the mind and the body connection. Now that I'm, you know, my eyes are open for it, I feel like I see it all the time, but
it's everywhere.
But you know, we're talking about the 1990s here, and I've seen the 2020 thing, and I think a lot of people listening to this have seen the 2020 thing and some of the attitudes from some of the doctors that were being interviewed in that. How do you feel like public perception and overall medicine has changed since 1997 in terms of the acceptance of this? Has it truly gotten better, or has it pretty much stayed stagnant for that time?
It's slowly evolving. It's slowly evolving. I'm getting hired now to consult with more medical doctors and psychiatrists and psychologists and so-called mind-body counselors are hiring me to help them with their own symptoms. Even a Jungian analyst one time. And they're getting better. Even surgeon recently, a couple surgeons hired me to work with them on their TMS. And they're getting better. And they're telling their patients now. And so it's a very slow grassroots movement, doing like what you're doing right now, one person at a time. You know, if we only help one person listening to this, we did a good thing here today. And then that person will tell more people. And so it's expanding, although Dr. Sarno never believed that it would ever catch on.
Yeah.
And he's probably right, because you're basically taking everyone's career and throwing it away at some point. You know, it would be economic chaos, was the words he used, in the medical industry if they listened to him. You wouldn't need anything, really.
Right.
I mean, you would need something. Of course, you break a bone or you need a transplant or something like that. It's always important for me to say this is not an anti-doctor message. It's not trashing the doctors. They just don't know about it. They don't know about it, you know. And so they think they're helping and they're trying their best. But what they're doing is making us worse, in the subtitle of my book, Faulty Medical Advice is Making Us Worse. By pointing to the body and saying that's the problem, they're making it worse.
Yeah. Steve, there's so later on today, I'm going slipper shopping. And I think since it snowed like crazy here the last few days, I'm going to be driving very slow. And I think this is the interview that I'm going to listen to, is the Ozanich interview. So we've got another gem from this. And he makes this really great comment about your health as a report card of your relationships. So it's him discussing this in a little bit more length. And if you're interested in kind of hearing the around part of that, it can be found at 2425, and it's about a 6-minute clip. So let's listen to this.
To heal, they'll listen.
If you had to pick one camp, so there's like, you know, there's a lot of people that have written books on this stuff. You know, there's a ton of them, obviously Sarno, but Schubner and Sachs and you and Schechter and Heller, and there's a lot of different camps. It seems like, like a lot of them sort of point to these issues are rooted in childhood. There's something repressed that you have to resolve that goes back that far. But then there's the other side of it, which is like, and my therapist agrees with me in this sense, and this is more of the Adam Heller camp, is that, you know, what's going on right now, or what's going on when the pain started, not necessarily what happened 25 years ago. I guess what side of the fence are you on if you had to? You know, I know that there's a lot of variables, but I guess which side of the fence are you more on?
Dr. Sarno's work is the most advanced still. Mm-hmm. It's nothing's improved on it yet. I mean, a lot of people have been very clever in their marketing of it. Had he been a younger guy, he'd probably been suing a lot of those people for using his name. He did not like people using his image or his name on anything.
Interesting.
But you'll see it all the time. The new Sarno thing or the better Sarno thing, it's not. It's not. It's just it's just clever marketing, you know. His work has to do with, you know, the relationship and the self-worth and the self-esteem, the traumas and all that stuff, that nothing will ever advance on that. Now, how you go about it may be a different thing. A lot of these things you're talking about are very narrow views, very narrow understandings of his full body of work. Extremely narrow when I listen to it. It's like, wow. You know, at some point they don't really get it. But you know what? They have all seen a way to make a living on it. He endorsed very few people. But yes, the current thing is the most important thing. Exactly. Because the past is gone. It's just a memory. It doesn't even exist.
Right.
But this is the thing. You're screening every day of your life through your child's eyes.
Yeah.
Through your child. And so it's very important to understand that at some point. But you can't do anything about it. And I get frustrated when people go do anger release work and things like that. You know what? Anger is just an effect. It's just like pain. Pain and anger are equivalents. You know, if you're going to work on the effect, just go get the disc trimmed or go get the knee scoped again. Why are you working on the anger? Anger is an effect. There's a reason for the anger. Go work on that.
Right.
Okay? That's what to work on. Go work on the anger. In my newest book, I don't know if you saw it, Back Pain Permanent Healing.
Yep.
Hit number one on Amazon for a couple of days. I couldn't hold it. I watched it sliding back away from number one. I watched Dr. Sarno's book hit the sliding right back into first place.
Yeah.
You can't stop it. That thing is the world-changing book. But that book, you know, I talk about many, many different things like this. And it's really amazing to watch it unfold and how all, we are all the same in this world. I've worked with CEOs and professional football players and athletes and congresspeople and Oscar-winning actors, and we're all the same. It doesn't matter poor or rich. We all have the same lack of self-esteem. You know, Louise Hay, the great Louise Hay. I don't know if you knew who that is. She died a couple months ago.
I bought her book. I haven't read it yet, but I've got it.
Yeah, she was the only person I know that did this work longer than Dr. Sarno. She was 90 when she died, and I think she was 20 when she had the cancer and healed herself from it. And she started Hay House Publishing, that great publishing house. She said, of all the people I've ever worked with, there was always a level of self-hatred in them. And that's exactly what I saw and what I see in everybody, what I had in myself. This is true. This is where the anger is coming from. And so let's work on that, you know, on taking care of ourselves. And that's where it begins and ends. And Dr. Sarno knew that. And so when you talk about all these other things, you know, you have to be very careful who you listen to.
Right.
It's a lot of the things that they're saying are not true. Like I hear it a lot, you know, with the MBS side, you know, well, if you have a pinch, if you have a weak leg or sciatica and a drop foot, that's not TMS. That's a pinched nerve. That's not true at all. That's not true. That's still TMS.
Yeah.
I've worked with many people that had it. The TMS doctors know that that's still TMS, and Dr. Sarno knew it. He even talked about drop hand a lot that he got. And so it's a very narrow understanding of his body of work. I've talked to oncologists who went to see Dr. Sarno, who he helped to heal from their own pain.
Yep.
My first question out of my mouth to them is always, is cancer TMS? You know, and they say, of course, you know, it's very obvious, but you have to be careful. Once again, if you don't have the tools, you just can't say that and then try to do it on your own. It may be dangerous to do. And of course, there are other outside factors that can cause cancer. Of course, if you're going to smoke, you know, for 60 years, if you're going to drink 7 days a week, if you're going to eat asbestos, right? There are certain external factors that can create and manifest it, of course, but it's almost always a mind-body process. And so, you know, that's the level I'm seeing and understanding. And the people are getting better. They've healed from cancer with my book and MS and just about anything they can think of. You know, it's once you realize the body is just the health is just a report card of your relationships.
All right. So now we roll forward a little over a year later, where I interviewed Michelle Hinsberger / Michelle Grew. And there were she. It's really a brilliant 70 minutes of interview that I did with her. And I mean, Dr. Schumacher has written books on this. He's probably the world's best expert that's living right now. Ozanna, which is so well-known, best-selling book, all that kind of stuff. And then you have this person from Thunder Bay, Ontario, that comes on and tells this story about some of the things that have happened over her life. And when we did the interview, she was only a few months removed from becoming a widow. So there was a lot that went into this particular interview. I'd highly recommend going back and checking it out. It's episode 53. And she came back a couple of years later and did another interview. I think that was even from maybe earlier this year. So the first clip is about 7 minutes long or so. And it's talking about dealing with the root cause of all of the issues that she's having, and sort of going, you know, trying to like isolate, hey, my shoulder hurts, or hey, then my back hurts, or hey, then my wrist hurts. And she sort of threw that out the window and said, okay, I'm going to think about this in a different way, and how much that helped her. So let's find this clip. It begins at 27 minutes and 12 seconds. Everything that has to do with it. Right, let's go back a little.
Within the line.
Yeah. Okay. This is about 7 minutes long. People pleasing element of the personality. Okay, so we're probably coming into 2017 at this point, and you had this underlying fear, you had the dots connected for you with Sarno, you know, keep humming on with the story.
Yeah. So 2017, so I was, like I said, I was almost to the point where I had it figured out. I remember specifically, I had just got in from dinner with my boyfriend, and we were lying on the couch. And then all of a sudden, I just had this panic overwhelmingly come over me. Like, never had a panic attack like that before in my life. And then the pain came back immediately. And for about 8 months straight, I would have panic attack after panic attack accompanied with the pain. Like, it got to the point where I couldn't walk room to room within my own house without being scared. And at that point, it was more fear of the symptoms. So fear of fear, essentially. And that, like, how am I going to get a hold of this? I know what this is. Why can't I do this? And then I remember being at one of my girlfriend's bachelorette parties, and I forced myself to go, which I am grateful I did. And I was literally on my phone the whole time, like, figuring out how I can deal with this. But it's funny, at the bachelorette party, it went away. My pain went away. I still had the panic, but my pain went away for those 2 days. It was just gone. And then as soon as I drove back into town, it came back. And then I started looking more at fear and reading more into anxiety. And I'm one of these people that I need to kind of logically understand things in a way. Like, I know there's so many, and that was me then. I think now I'm more in tune with my intuition and going on my gut feeling.
Yep.
But then I was very much a logical person. So for me, diving into anxiety and what anxiety does to us, it's tangible for me to understand getting through this. So, I forget what the user's name is on the TMS forum, but he was kind of, I think it was on the old TMS forum too. He was the one who talked a lot about how for him, it was changing his relationship with fear that helped alleviate his symptoms. And in my gut, I knew that's what I had to do. So I researched anxiety and started putting all of my symptoms into one category, instead of being like, well, if I get rid of the panic, then I'll get rid of my symptoms. If I get rid of the pain, then I'll get rid of my panic. I decided I needed to collectively put it all together and just deal with it as one thing. That was the only way I could get through this.
Which is anxiety.
Yes. For whatever reason, that's just what clicked for me. And I read a book called At Last a Life by Paul David. It's a self-published book. And he basically talks about his anxiety journey and how he had it for 15 years and how he got through it. And I applied his principles to treating my TMS and my panic symptoms. And so for the next, so this would have been July that I went to the bachelorette party.
Of 2017 or 2018.
17. Yeah. And then from about August till December, I started applying these principles, which basically was learning to accept absolutely everything, every sensation, whether it be pain, panic, every emotion, learning to actually like go through emotions instead of logically go through them, actually feel emotions. So what it feels like in your body to feel anger or sadness or guilt or shame. I had to look at my whole TMS symptoms and emotions as part of me, but not all of me. But they were a part that I needed to become acquainted with and comfortable in order for me to get through. And so for about 5 months, it was me just learning how to sit with the pain without judging it, sit with my emotions without judging them, sit with my panic without judging it. My thoughts were horrible at that point. So getting to know like the lizard brain and said it would play on me. And that one thing he said on his blog, Paul David, was everything that you think that has to do with anxiety is anxiety. Speaking
it,
literally.
Sorry, it cut out. You said everything that has to do with anxiety is or is not.
Is. So is, yes. So say your thought is like, oh my God, I'm not doing this right. Well, that's anxiety, yeah. Right? So, and I had a lot of those thoughts. I was talking to my counselor and I had a lot of those, like, what if I'm doing this wrong? Well, that's an anxiety thought. That's perpetuating the symptoms,
and
right?
You're just saying like, I mean, this could be anything, right? It could be how you handled a conversation with a client. It could be the type of thing that you bought at the store. Like you're saying like this was popping up everywhere.
Everywhere. Like not only was I having to deal with the lizard brain about my TMS symptoms, I started to realize I have to start dealing with these thoughts that and behaviors that led up to these TMS symptoms. Like in order for me to live a full life, I need to actually start diving into this crappy stuff that I've been avoiding for a very long time. And it was at that point when I realized I knew I was going to get through it, when I could actually start thinking about the actual problems that were perpetuating the TMS as opposed to just the TMS itself.
Michelle is definitely one of the most likable people that I have ever talked to. And I love her storytelling and everything that she brings to the table. I think she's a tremendous speaker. Definitely go back and listen to episode 53 if you want to hear a little bit more on that particular topic. Let's round it out, though, from that episode. So if you're listening along, this begins at 46:24. And it's about a 7-minute clip. Let's see here. Let me find it. Okay. Okay. This will run for 9 or 10 seconds, then we'll get into it. So 46:24, and it's about 5 minutes long. Because, right, you know, like I see the wedding pictures, right? And then something happened, right? I guess talk about like you mentioned, like the anxiety comes back, the pain comes back, and like, you know, grief is a thing that just a lot of us can't, we just don't have the capacity to deal with. It's just something that we almost like shun away and we repress, and that's, you know, that's the root of a lot of the problems. So is it something where you talked about feeling a lot of these feelings in your trunk, is what you had mentioned earlier, like solar plexus and into the chest and all that kind of stuff? Like maybe the feeling in the tracking you were doing a year and a half was, that's a feeling of sadness versus this is a feeling of grief, which are, they're similar, but they are two different things.
Right.
Is that like, you know, kind of run us through a little bit more about A, it did come back, two, where were you feeling those types of pains? And then I know you had said you're going to be dealing with it certainly for a long, long time. But when I say the worst of the feeling, meaning the worst of the pain, like how long did that take to really get over since you had the tools?
Yeah. So the pain itself, so the emotional pain, the worst of it, was probably the first 3 months. Like I literally felt like my soul was ripped out of me. It's hard to even describe. Very overwhelming. And then the back pain and the pelvic pain came back intermittently. I would say because I was able to just leave it and knew that it was there to protect me in a way, the pain was there to distract me from what I was going through and the feelings I was having losing Evan. I was okay in a way with them being there because it was annoying. It was, I'm not going to lie. Oh my God, I have to deal with this pain on top of this grief now. But just being able to just like know that it was there for a reason to protect me, regardless of how annoyed I was with it. So it probably would have only lasted about a week at a time at the most, but then it would come back intermittently. So every time I would go into like a huge, deep wave of grief, the pain would kind of come back a little bit. But now, so this has been about 5.5 months since the accident. I don't really get the pain anymore. I just get the grief come in waves. I get some sensations. I think a lot of people with TMS believe that we should never have TMS sensations once we're healed, but that's untrue. We're human beings. I mean, our nervous systems are there to protect us, so we're always going to have TMS symptoms. And I just had to acknowledge that it wasn't this evil thing like I first thought it was. It was really there to protect me, help distract me from all the grief I was going through with Evan. So,
certainly. Now I'm envisioning these like tracking sessions as almost being like meditation sessions, or is it not? Is it not quite that? I mean, maybe
it can be. I mean, okay. It depends. Like sometimes it is meditation, like especially when you're practicing. Like if I'm lying in bed and I'm having a really bad day, I go into my body and it does become more of a meditation. When I'm just kind of out and about and I'm doing it, it's more of like, I guess it's connected. It's more being mindful. It's being mindful and aware of where you are in the present moment. So if I'm out with friends and they're having a great time and I'm feeling really down because of everything that's happened, I don't necessarily need to run out of the room or blame them for having a good time when I'm feeling so crappy. I just kind of go into myself and into my body and allow myself to feel like that for that time being. And then usually if I actually allow myself and be mindful and kind of meditative, like you said, maybe it's a quick like minute meditation, if you want to call it that, of the sensations in your body. And just now I don't even need to label them or like necessarily describe the sensation. I can just really just feel, lean into it. It usually passes a lot quicker and I'm able to become more present with my friends.
If you've listened to me talk on this podcast for any amount of time, somatic work is probably my favorite tool in the toolkit of all of them. So in our subsequent episode after this, Michelle talked a lot more about some of her training, specifically in somatic work that she's done since then. So thanks you all so much for hanging out. Over 200 episodes in, this is still something that I have a lot of fun with and brings me a lot of joy. And I love hearing from people all around the world that are getting something out of this podcast. So this is the end for 2021, and I will see you all next year.